I'm Jen De La Vega.
And I'm Clara Park.
Welcome to The Cinema Chefs, the podcast for people who love to cook, watch movies, and cook what they see in movies. Today, for our final episode of season one, we are talking about special occasion dining in
Big Night!
Some spoilers ahead if you haven't seen the movie, and if you're going to watch it, I want to issue a content warning for tense sibling rivalry, excessive smoking, and some misogyny.
What is the one-sentence summary of this movie? An ambitious Italian immigrant and his genius chef brother hope that a VIP dinner will save their authentic Italian restaurant from closing.
We chose this movie because it's quite literally on everyone's list of top movies about food. It's at the top of my Letterboxd account.
Written by Stanley Tucci and Joseph Tropiano, directed by Stanley Tucci and Campbell Scott, this film came out in 1996 and stars Tucci, Tony Shalhoub, Minnie Driver, Ian Holm, Mark Anthony, and Isabella Rossellini. The film was nominated for so many different awards, ultimately winning awards for screenwriting at Sundance, Best First Film by the New York Film Critics Circle Awards, Best Supporting Actor for Shalhoub by the National Society of Film Critics, Excellence in Filmmaking by the National Board of Review, and Best Screenplay and Best New Filmmaker by the Boston Society of Film Critics.
Did you know there's also a cookbook based on the movie?
Yes, I do own this. I actually own this book. I must admit that the book is a fairly recent edition. I picked it up at some used bookstore way before this podcast was remotely an idea in either of our minds. I first saw the movie right around the time it came out. It's been a while since I watched it, and I can't tell you how much more deeply this film resonates with me as an adult, as a chef, and I cried at the end, even though I knew it was going to happen.
Oh, I know. It hit me too in the feels. I watched it in college on HBO at home before I even became a chef, before I even had thoughts about being a chef. It was part of my culinary awakening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I keep thinking about how ironic it is that a restaurant like Paradise, which would absolutely kill today, super authentic, you have this super genius chef only doing the most authentic recipes, super handsome young Stanley Tucci as front of house. I mean, forget about it. Like, you are printing your own money if you open that today.
Seriously, it would hit in Brooklyn so easily. Diners today are looking for an authentic dining experience. You have to imagine that in 1950s Jersey City, they weren't familiar with risotto, timpano, or Fiorentina sauce.
No, I would eat everything they serve at that restaurant. In a heartbeat.
So let's get to the main event, the dinner for Louis Prima.
Yes! I totally forgot that they highlight the different courses with the title screens.
Yeah.
And they have la zuppa, i primi, i secondi, i dolci.
Wow. If you remember from our Willy Wonka episode about course meals, first we want to highlight that table setting. We see it in its full glory at the 1 hour mark. They literally transform their tiny restaurant into one giant banquet table. You got your soup spoon, your dinner spoon, three glasses for wine, another wine, water. We've got flowers from Anne, from Allison Janney's character.
Yes.
We also really love the white knitted tablecloth. I don't know if you saw that detail, but it's not just a white iron tablecloth. It has a knitted one on top of it.
Very Italian.
Yes. And the table sets the scene for this extremely special occasion.
Absolutely. I think a great tablescape sets the mood for any special occasion. It's why the glassware, flowers, and plates at fancy restaurants are always so nice. You're setting the mood, the ambiance. In Korean, you'd say the punigi.
We're learning Korean now. You had mentioned in episode 5, our Willy Wonka episode, that setting the table the night before is a great hosting hack.
Yes, it's one less thing to think about, and I think it's actually implied in Big Night that they had set the table way before the guests had arrived. It was one thing you could check off your to-do list and not worry about anything else, but did you catch that line from Pascal, though?
What'd he say?
As soon as he sees the gorgeous table, he shouts, "It's like the Last Supper," which is crazy foreshadowing because he goes on to betray not one, but both brothers.
Judas!
Oh my God, I'm still, breaks my heart even thinking about it now. But in fun news, I love that Tony Shalhoub's love interest is Allison Janney.
Yes.
I totally didn't even register this the first time I watched this. And I'll be honest, I didn't watch The West Wing when it first came out.
Oh.
I watched it much later. So I think that's why I didn't clock that it was Allison Janney. She is so good at anything she does. And as the flower shop lady, she brings the extra special bouquets to the dinner, which I thought was just so sweet. And then just the comic relief of Tony Shalhoub climbing into.
He is such a nutcase. In this film, he's such a nutcase. When he's so awkward and doesn't know how to flirt, he just, I don't know, walks into a flower case or just like walks into the wall and tries to melt into it. He's so ridiculous.
He can't, like, he wants to say so many things to her and he's like, "Hi, I'll take the flowers.
Bye. So speaking of flowers, they can add elegance and beauty to any table. I think people should know that they don't need to go to an expensive florist for flowers. I'm a fan of a bodega flower or even dried flowers. You can use them again. Or head to your farmer's market. There's usually a flower vendor there as well.
No, me too. I think even seasonal fruit in a nice bowl can be, you know, with some leaves can be a really nice centerpiece. A bowl of lemons can be really beautiful. I did a centerpiece with holly leaves and berries by my parents for a Christmas dinner one time, and they have a holly tree outside. So everything was totally free, but you can get a little bit more creative. I think I put a candle in the center.
Very nice. Candles also add to ambiance. Gorgeous, low lighting, and relatively inexpensive. You can pick up candles or tea lights at pretty much any craft store or online. Claire, do you want to know a trick?
I would love to know a trick.
So at big events, when you have a lot of tea lights for the tables, we put a little bit of water at the bottom of the glass vessel so that the wax does not stick to the bottom. So at the end of the night, when the candle has completely burned out and there's a pool of wax, you don't have to stick a knife in there to jam out all that hardened wax. Yeah. If you have a layer of water, it'll just pop right out.
That's really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Learning tricks every day. Jen, what if someone doesn't have nice silverware or glassware?
Well, I think mismatchy vintage is still cool. I go to a lot of thrift stores to check out the 99-cent silverware bin. Nice. You can also get really cool plates. I always try to go for florals and simple whites. But yeah, it's a good solution and it's cheap. What about you?
I think aesthetics have taken over everything. So I think you can go to a place like Target and get really beautiful plates or silverware or glassware, but I think my favorite place is TJ Maxx, Home Goods.
Really?
You can get really nice stuff like Riedel glassware, Villeroy & Boch, 50% off.
What?
I think you have to go in with like a treasure hunter mindset. Honestly, the bulk of my really nice stemware is from TJ Maxx and Home Goods.
That's awesome. We've covered the table, the flowers, and now we move on to the menu. How do you go about planning a special occasion menu, Clara?
I think like primo, you look for a showstopper like the timpano, but you also need to take into account people's dining preferences.
Yes.
These days, people have various allergies, likes and dislikes. I'm actually hosting a brunch soon where one person doesn't eat seafood, one person doesn't eat meat, and then I'm allergic to oranges. So no salmon Benedict or mimosas that day.
How do you deliver on a delicious meal for a table of vegans, vegetarians, and carnivores alike? The answer is very carefully. I might choose dishes that can be easily modified. Something like a starch. Like we would have potato and make it completely vegan in case there's a vegan at the table, but a person who eats meat will still be able to eat it.
Absolutely. And I think also if you have a really flavorful marinade that you can use for like chicken, pork, fish, tofu, eggplant, portobello, the hard work is the marinade.
Yes.
And then you can kind of let it do its thing for whatever your entree is. And then I think also sauce on side.
That is so, always good, yes.
You know, maybe you have a, you know, aioli that you really like and you have a vegan at your dinner. You could put the aioli on the side. You could also get vegan mayo and then make a side, bite of a side for the vegan. But I think using versatile marinades for a variety of proteins and applications is a great way to kind of stretch a main course. And then having sauce on the side, you kind of leave it up to the diner to figure out what they can and cannot eat.
Yeah. The best way to approach it, if you're worried about having too many versions of something, is start with the most difficult allergy or restriction. So I always start by making a vegan sauce. So I don't have to make two. Sometimes I'll make two if I have the time. But if you really want to like streamline everything, start with the vegan sauce or marinade and then build from there.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when people think vegan marinade, they're like, oh no, it's vegan marinade, but
it's easier than you think.
Right. Olive oils, vinegars, herbs, spices, you know, garlic, onion, what have you, 100% vegan.
There you go.
So I would say most marinades tend to be vegan anyway, but then they get thrown on proteins and that's what makes them not vegan. Mm-hmm. Jen, what is your best show-stopping dish?
Let's see. Well, kamayan is not a dish, but it's a style of eating. It is a show-stopping big display of rice on a banana leaf lined table. And then we pile on proteins over each section of rice. And so you eat with your hands. It's a really wonderful Filipino style of dining. But I gotta say, my biggest showstopper has been mole turkey.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I think most people who are listening will say that their show-stopping dish or the biggest thing they've ever made was a Thanksgiving turkey.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But my trick for that is I actually don't make whole birds anymore.
Hatchcock?
You know, I buy only the parts that I know I'm going to need because I tend to have smaller Thanksgiving meals.
Okay, mm-hmm. That is a good tip.
So if everybody wants a leg, I'll just buy a bunch of legs.
No way. That's so cool. It's like almost like something invented in a lab, just like a platter
almost
with like six turkey legs on it.
But it's out there. It's available for you. You can do it too.
Amazing. Amazing.
What about you? What's your show-stopping dish?
Honestly, I'm sort of classic. So prime rib or a whole roasted bird, turkey, chicken, etc. Usually something that you can kind of present with fanfare, like, ta-da, look what I've made. And then you take it back into the kitchen and then you carve it up. Because I think that visual reveal of something so impressive as a prime rib or a whole roasted duck or whatever is just so, it is a literal showstopper. You're like, wow, What is that?
I mean, we have a few examples in the film. We have a whole roasted fish. We have a whole suckling pig. It's just
whole
really
roasted chickens.
Yes, yeah. That's right. And at some fine dining restaurants at 11 Madison Park, they show you the lavender duck before they go in to roast it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hello, listeners. Clara here. Hope you're enjoying our podcast. If you are really enjoying it, want to support the show, become a member on Fourth Wall and take a deeper dive behind the scenes with us. We share recipes, cooking tutorials, and take you on the road as we explore film locations and more. As a paid subscriber, you get access to insider knowledge, but also help us pay for editing, web hosting, and other services that make our podcast possible. Join us at thecinemachefs-shop.fourthwall.com. That's thecinemachefs, all one word, -shop.fourthwall.com. Remember, you can become a better cook just by watching a movie. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or Pocket Cast, or wherever you stream your favorite podcasts. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to our conversation.
Taking inspiration from the movie, I love, love, love that the first course is just this simple soup, clear broth with some light vegetables. The primi features two starches, the risotto that is inspired by the Italian flag, and then the timpano with the handmade garganelli. I think Primo made it more difficult for himself by adding risotto to the menu, since he's clearly cooking it a la minute.
Yeah, I mean, this was foreshadowed in the beginning of the film, that risotto takes so long. How should he have prepared it?
So when I worked in restaurants, you would essentially par cook the risotto. So let's say you have 200 reservations on the books and you're like, okay, I'll probably sell, I don't know, 50 risottos. You painstakingly, you know, sweat your onions and your shallots and add in your rice and slowly cook with the broth or stock. And then you take it about 2/3 of the way. And then you empty it out onto a parchment-lined sheet tray, and then you put X's in it to help it cool down faster.
Creating more surface area.
More surface area. And then you would let it cool down in the walk-in. And then when you were ready for service, you just take these cold clumps of par-cooked risotto. And then it went from like a 30-minute pickup to, you know, 5-10-minute pickup.
Can you explain to the folks what a pickup is?
Pickup is the cooking time once someone orders something. So like a well-done steak has a very long pickup time. Really thin chicken paillard has a very short pickup time. Mm. Something like risotto that should take a very long time to cook at home because it's been par cooked, the pickup time is much lower.
Yeah, we've done risotto similarly at weddings and doing a last round of broth and adding more butter and shaving that Parmesan cheese on at the last minute makes such a huge difference.
Absolutely.
But it's not a dish that I openly pitch to my clients because it's a pain in the ass.
No, absolutely. It's a labor of love. I had a dinner, my friend had a dinner party and it was like risotto for I think 10 or 15 people. And I was cooking it for everybody. I was sweating. It was like my elbow was like up against the, it was like, you should have a shallow round pot, like a rondeau for making a large quantity of risotto. But this was like a stock pot. So I was like literally
tall,
like this.
Too tall.
For 20, 30 minutes. And even her friends were like, your friend is like sweating in the kitchen. My God. When you're stirring the risotto, the stirring action sort of activates the starches and it makes it creamier. If you've had bad risotto, nobody loved it enough and they didn't stir it enough. So
yeah.
You really gotta add in the liquid in small increments and let it get absorbed. I think now there's like all sorts of chef hacks where you can like microwave risotto or not do that. But in my experience, I haven't had a really good, really creamy risotto that hasn't, like, you haven't, you feel the love. You feel the time that went into it.
We can enumerate the measure of love in an ingredient by how much we've stirred it.
Absolutely. Nona style. But going back to the timpano, it is a genius course to serve because it's such a showstopper and all the prep is done ahead of time. They just need to heat it in the oven. I think whenever you're entertaining, special occasion or not, you want the make-ahead courses. Mm-hmm. The heavy lifting is done way ahead of the party. Braises, casseroles, lasagna. Or you want things that can be cooked and remain in good condition. I heard that at Plaza Athenae in Paris, they would poach fish and just let it hang out for hours. And that's actually true. Mm-hmm. I've done that.
Me too. I par cook sides of salmon at a low temp and then hold it in the fridge until dinner. And then it needs to broil for just 2 minutes. So much of my cooking has to be held or prepped enough that we can finish it quickly. Many events are like, hurry up and wait. You know, I'm watching wedding vows and listening for cheers, and that means go.
Have you ever served a whole suckling pig?
No, but it is a huge part of my culture. We call it lechon, and we have it at many special occasions, from birthdays to weddings to funerals, and I always try to sneak to the front of the line to get the ears or the crispy skin first.
Nice. Nice. I have not served a whole suckling pig, but I've had two different birthday celebrations where we celebrated with a whole suckling pig. Mm. Definitely an occasion to remember. In the movie, the Secondi includes the pig, whole fish, artichokes, assorted vegetables, and roast chickens. The guests actually look shocked and a bit scared at the sheer volume of food. They were clearly not prepared for more.
Yeah, they looked terrified. And I also think it's something that you need to keep in mind with special occasion dining. It should always be enjoyable. You don't want to feed people until they burst. Guests should leave happy and full. Not bursting at the seams and not about to throw them up.
Jen, where is the timpano in the movie?
We have it at 40 minutes, 27 seconds. That's when they begin the prep. Let me read you the quote. Phyllis, timpano is a pasta, see? With a special crust. It is shaped like a drum, a timpani drum. Inside are the most important things in the world. I'm sorry, Tony Shalhoub's Italian accent is way better than Ian Holm's and better than mine. We go into a gorgeous overhead sequence of pasta making by hand. There's lots of kneading and rolling on the marble top. What is timpano? Timpano? I don't know which one's the right emphasis. It's large pasta sheets lining a big pot, like a double crusted pie. So you have one under and one over. It's filled with more pasta that handmade, what was it?
Garganelli.
Garganelli. We have tomato sauce, hard-boiled egg, cheese, meatballs. I've always wanted to make this, but haven't had the time or occasion.
I also have wanted to make this, but I have not. And the rumor is that it's based on Stanley Tucci's family's recipe.
It's not in that cookbook, is it?
It is not in this book.
Bummer.
Which, you know, I feel like that's the main recipe in the movie, so I'm a little bit sad that it's not in here.
So later on, the brothers check in the oven, and they're afraid the guests are getting too drunk, and the timpano is drying out. They finally start the meal at 1 hour 16 minutes into the film. They're worried that the timpano is falling apart when it's too hot. So similarly to lasagna, you don't slice it right out of the oven. It has to settle into itself so it can be sliceable. So cheese, when it's super melty, is unstable. So we need it to cool just slightly so it can hold together. It's not yet structurally sound when it's piping hot.
So let's get to some culinary terms and techniques and ingredients featured in the movie. We already talked about zuppa, Italian for soup, and primi, first courses in Italian, secondi, second courses in Italian.
Ooh, some trivia.
Yeah, tell me.
So we have, that's funny that the courses are primo, secundi, and their names are primo and secundo. But throughout the film, people refer to secundo as secco, which has a different meaning. Secco means dry.
Dry. Sec in French. Dolci, literally sweets. This is what desserts are called in Italian.
I love that they had a big bowl of nuts during the dessert course with a nutcracker. Like, I just want that in my house.
Yeah, no.
I'm going to go do that.
Fantastic. I will be on the lookout for a nutcracker. Mm. Risotto, we discussed earlier, classic creamy Italian rice dish, but I want to focus on the three kinds of rice, arborio, carnaroli, vialone, nano. So the most often used rice for risotto is arborio. I didn't know carnaroli or vialone nano until I started working in restaurants.
So what is the difference between those rices and regular, like jasmine rice?
The Italian rices that you use for risotto, they just have a much hardier structure. Mm. So they can kind of withstand that constant stirring, that constant beating down with like liquid and fat and time. Whereas if you try to do this with jasmine rice, sushi rice, sticky rice, it would just get really mushy. Mm. I mean, it might even turn into porridge. I just feel like the starch build of those grains is not hearty. Yeah, you just get like a bowl of mush.
Got it.
We already talked about the timpano, baked pasta dish from Italy. There is actually a great recipe in the Polizzi Social Club cookbook, so I highly recommend that cookbook. Ragu, slow-cooked meat sauce. I think it's hilarious that one of the best-selling mass-produced pasta sauces is called ragu. It's like ragu and prego. So it's like meat sauce and you're welcome. Like, those are the Italian names that they use to signify the old country, I guess. Bolognese from Bologna region of Italy. Primo says that that's where they're from. Usually implies meat sauce, spaghetti bolognese, lasagna bolognese, which again, Primo talks about how delicious and wonderful this dish is. And then Fiorentina sauce, spinach. In the U.S., Florentine usually means spinach.
Yeah, we have this cute scene between Allison Janney and Tony Shalhoub where he's making Fiorentina sauce. And I didn't know that it was tomato and cream also. Like, cream is optional, but one of the main ingredients is tomato. So the U.S. bastardization of Florentine is just spinach. That's our understanding of it. But there's more components to it.
I mean, that totally makes sense. And it totally makes sense that the Americans would have taken one aspect of it and
simplified it a little too far. I just think it's really funny that Primo says that he's like, oh, I don't do dairy very well. And then she goes, oh, I love cream. We can add cream.
As anyone out there knows, when someone is interested, they will pretty much agree to whatever you want.
All right. Where is the best place to have a special occasion meal in Philly, Clara?
I would say my house.
But not everyone's invited to your house.
You're not invited. All kidding aside, I often recommend Fork or Vernick for special occasions. Really good food and service. What about you, Jen?
Well, for that whole suckling pig experience, I love Wu's Wonton King in Chinatown. Make sure you call ahead. They need like 48 hours of notice. I can't believe I'm saying this, but my family really loves Carmine's in Times Square and Maggiano's on the West Coast.
The value.
I know. It's because the portions are so big and they can seat a lot of us. So we're always going home with multiple bags of to-go boxes.
Amazing.
And our favorite place in the Bay Area has been Uncle Chung's in El Sobrante. It's a Szechuan-style, family-style dining place. We've been going there for decades. It's a white tablecloth. They give the kids cocktail-looking Sprite with a little monkey hanging off of it.
I love
that place growing up. And lately, my parents just really love meat. They've been going to Greenfields or Fogo de Chao. Yes. We planned my grandma's 90th birthday at Fogo de Chao.
Yes, I feel like any Asian grandmother would love Fogo de Chao. It's, again, the value. So much protein for a relatively low ticket price. And then it's unlimited, which is insane. Actually, my brother and I went to Brazilian barbecue. And, you know, it's the green. The green ticket is yes. The red is no. My brother ate so much that they stopped coming to our table.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they, like, would run away.
They see the green light, but they're like, no,
well,
you're cut off.
I mean, they lost so much money, my brother. Like, he probably ate, like, a couple $100 worth of meat.
Listeners, viewers, can you share your favorite special occasion restaurant in your town or your secret tips for special occasion dining in your home?
That's a wrap on season one of The Cinema Chefs. We encourage you to listen to all of our episodes on repeat until we return for season two, date TBD. I can't tell you how much fun I've had making this podcast, and I hope that you learned something about cooking, about ingredients, and feel a little bit more confident in the kitchen.
Yes, please tell a food and film loving friend about The Cinema Chefs. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, whatever you're using, and it helps us reach more lovely listeners and viewers like you. Stay tuned for bonus content and videos from us.
Thank you, Jen. This has really been so much fun. Like, it's a lot of work, meaning that there's a lot of time that goes into it, but I never felt like it was work. I loved rewatching these movies. I love looking up different recipes, looking at different cookbooks, you know, and then I'm sure, like our viewers, once you watch Chef, you have to go eat a Cubano. Once you watch Phantom Thread, you need an English breakfast. It's been a really fun way to kind of reconnect with certain dishes and certain restaurants that I may not have thought about in a while, but those memories got jogged from rewatching these movies, writing these scripts, having these really fun conversations with you, Jen.
Yeah. 6 months ago, this was not a podcast.
So it was an idea.
It was just an idea we had around around the holiday time in 2024. If you're listening in the future, we're really happy that you're here and you're listening, that you're supporting us. And please stay tuned for ways that you can help us build a better podcast. So I'm a relatively new producer and I've been editing everything myself. And so we're going to... We're going to improve it bit by bit. I'm going to remaster. I have a plan to remaster and sound design later on, so stay tuned for that. And I'm just so grateful for all of you for listening, because without you, we wouldn't have a show to give you. I mean, we're nothing without our audience.
Absolutely, 100%. Thank you to Nikki Newsom for making our logo. Thank you for Lauren D for giving us her podcast Goddess Excellence. Thank you for my friends and family that have been listening since day one. I can't tell you how many of my friends are literally caught up in every single episode. As soon as an episode drops, they're like, Clara, I'm going to listen. I'm going to listen on my drive home. I'm going to listen, you know, before I go to bed. And that means everything.
I'd like to thank Jennifer Cohen for introducing
us. Yes, that's Jen. You brought us together.
Yes. So thank you from one Jennifer to another for bringing us together. And now we have a podcast. It's all thanks to you.
And Jen knew.
She knew we would get along.
And she was the least bit surprised that we're doing a podcast together. she's like, of course you are. So thank you, Jen.
All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning into season one of The Cinema Chefs. Please share your tips and tricks with our Instagram at The Cinema Chefs or drop us a line at thecinemachefs@gmail.com. We hope you enjoyed the show. This is Jen.
And Clara, signing off.
Just remember, you can become a better cook just by watching a movie. The Cinema Chefs was recorded in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, edited by me, Jen De La Vega, music by Penguin Music, Paradise Island from Pixabay, and a final thank you to Nikki Newsom, who made our logo.